Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare! All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up.
Hi.
Hello. Just before I turned on the mic, my stomach grumbled and I was like, oh no.
Well, you know, it happens.
You know, I haven't had dinner, so I'm like, rabid. But, you know, there's a bit of wine coming up in this scene, so hey.
Here you go. A bit of wine.
A bit of wine.
Maybe more than a bit of wine. Anyway,
barrel full.
Spoiler alert. So okay. Let's talk a little bit about season 2, episode 40.
Yes. Dead Men's Skulls. Dun, dun. So this scene is almost at least half of it taken up by telling of a dream. And dreams are going to figure very heavily in this play. And I actually looked into it a bit and turns out that the word dream is said more in this play than in any play, including Midsummer Night's Dream. It's said... spoken 25 times by characters
dream, dream,
in this play.
Dream, ding, 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 ding.
Dream, dream, dream. Yeah, we're going to be ding-dinging all over the place.
But then, things keep changing in this play. Things keep, reality keeps altering in this play.
The body count just keeps piling up. So,
remember,
you know.
It's the tragedy of Richard the Third.
Yeah, sorry, there's no spoilers because that's just the way it is, okay?
And that's the way it
is.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are three main dreams, but if you listen back to scene one, we also got a heads up about dreams, didn't we?
We did. The king
has been having dreams, and we haven't even met him yet. But
he puts a lot of
stock.
Weight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stock.
A lot of stock in his dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he actually is using the dream as a prophetic thing to spur him into action. These other three dreams end up being misinterpreted and not applied to the detriment of the person who has the dream or someone near them. So Clarence has this incredibly detailed dream about how he's drowning, and he's like, okay, whatever, you know. I mean, yeah, it was scary, but it's not Richard's fault.
Well, you know, indirectly.
Yeah, but indirectly. He believes Richard is a sweet guy until nearly the end.
Right. Well, but they all do. I mean, Richard keeps saying to everyone who will listen, I'm a good guy.
Right.
Like, I just speak what I see. I'm a good guy.
Right. It's like, and they're all like,
yeah. Yeah. They're all like, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, they usually call him no bad hedgehog and such.
Right. But they also, I don't know.
Women do. The women definitely call him out for being horrible.
Yeah, but I mean, do they call him out for being horrible? Or do they call him out for the way he looks and how he presents himself? And like, because, I mean, I think they're picking up on his mother's description of him. I mean, I think the brothers, I don't know. I mean, I'll have to
go through
this scene.
Yeah, the brothers care about him.
Well, and also, the brothers,
the last three plays, they did. Yeah.
Fought valiantly.
Yeah.
For them.
He's been on their side. He's totally supported them through the whole thing.
He's risked a lot to be...
Except when Clarence flip-flopped to Warwick, you know, which is a sin that has not been forgiven, as you'll see here.
But he was also married to Warwick's daughter, so that, you know...
Yeah, he is.
Familial bonds get cloudy when that happens.
Clouded. Yep, for sure. In fact, a little side note, I'm going to shout them out here. I went to a little club called Shakespeare for All this weekend, and it's Shakespeare for the non, you know, scholarly people. And I walk into the room and it was a reading, you know, I knew it was going to be like we're reading a play and everything. So I walk in and I go, "Hey guys, what play are we reading today?" And they go, "Henry the Sixth, Part Two." And I'm like, "What?" Why of all things? But it was great to
I love that play.
To get that backstory and remember it and read through it and stuff. So yeah,
they're reading
through the whole canon. Yeah, two and three are really good. Yeah, so that was fun.
Did you get to read too, or were you just listening?
I was reading. Yeah, but they read line to line to line. So it was a little odd because the same voice isn't being Margaret, for instance, the whole time.
Oh.
So it was a little, it threw me a little bit. It was hard to follow a little bit. But yeah, that was just, it was very fair that way. Everybody gets to read.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
I like
but I kept
idea.
Looking at the big juicy speeches going, "Land on me." And they didn't. Mostly. Yeah. But that's okay. It's the roll of the dice. Yeah. All right. So Clarence is going, he's in prison. We were told on the first scene that he was marching in, Hastings was marching out.
Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth's being blamed by Richard for Clarence's incarceration, but we know she didn't do it. We know who did it.
We know who, because he told us.
He told us.
And this dream that he has is so incredibly detailed. We'll go through it and everything. But it definitely speaks about his own anxieties and guilt that he has been feeling, right? It's very revealing about him. And usually in classical literature, when characters have dreams, you know, they're very supernatural, sent by God and all this stuff, you know, and messages and this and that. But I feel that Shakespeare is a little bit messing with that tradition here because this dream is very personal and psychological for him, you know? And so it's, in a way it's easy to understand why he misinterpreted it because he's like, this is all just about my own shit. And the dreams in this play, therefore, tend to be sort of ineffective after people wake up and go, "Shake it off. Don't worry. I'm fine." Yeah.
That wasn't sent by God.
Yeah. It was just me and something I ate.
What I watched on TV last night.
Yes. Oh, God. House of Usher, I see you. Yeah. So, you know, this one is kind of more like Oedipus in that way. You know, Oedipus has this whole prophecy thing that comes his way. And
he's like, meh.
Like, that's not going to happen.
How could that happen?
Yeah.
That couldn't happen.
Very bad.
Well, and also it's like Macbeth too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not in dream form, but, you know, when...
Prophecies.
When,
yeah.
Yeah. Burnham would come.
Right. That can't happen.
That can't happen.
There's not anyone that's not born out of a woman.
Right. Can't happen.
Technicalities. Lost on a technicality. And then, you know, we've started to talk about it with St. Paul, by St. Paul and all this stuff. There's a lot of Christian imagery in this play. A lot of Christian phrasing. Clarence's dream kind of stands out as this semi-pagan thing because he starts talking about the ferryman who rows him across the river Styx. That ain't no Christian imagery, right? And what's cool, though, because Aaron and I just did Measure for Measure, is we have that echoing of Dante again here. And actually, not again, because this is earlier than Measure for Measure, but so it's in Shakespeare's head, you know?
Virgil. Well, but it would have been, right, I mean, that would have been taught to every schoolboy.
Yes, for sure. And so it made a big impression, and he likes that imagery, and he brings it back and brings it back. So when he talks about the poet that writes this thing, the poet is very specific. It's definitely Virgil. And Clarence is confronted about with all the souls of the people that he killed. So even though he goes into that pagan imagery, there's a whole Christian guilt shit that's tormenting him.
Wait a minute. Is there such a thing as pagan guilt? Or is it just Christian guilt?
Yeah, it's Jewish Christian guilt. The pagans are like, fuck it, I'll just put my sword through that dude and just...
I don't know if that's fair. I mean, we have to find out if there's pagan guilt.
One would wish that there was just no guilt.
I know.
Fuck it.
Yeah. I think it's part of the human condition, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just before we came on board here, Aaron and I had an interesting discussion about murderers.
Murderers!
Yeah, so we have these two murderers who come in, and we saw them for a second at the end of the last scene, and they were given a commission to go in and kill Clarence from Richard. But we have a very long conversation between these two, and we get to learn about them, which is unusual in the land of murderers.
So the reason we had this conversation is Ari and I were having a conversation about no villains in Shakespeare. And he argued that, in fact, that there are villains in Shakespeare. And I had to consider this. And he specifically brought up Titus Andronicus and the sons, Tamora's sons, and how awful they are. And they have no backstory. We just see them being awful and violent, and they're not even, it's not even retribution. It's just, it's
sheer
just torture.
Glee. Yeah.
It's glee in torture. Right. So yeah. I took his point there, but then he said, and all the murderers that we meet.
Yeah.
And since we hadn't gotten to this scene yet, and we did Richard III, he was in it too, but we hadn't gone through this with a fine-toothed comb, and he and I were just really talking about the murderers in Macbeth.
No, but so I think here in this scene, we get a lot of insight into these people, and they are, and the question of status is really bandied about in this scene. So Clarence, to his, detriment, keeps bringing it up and then trying to go back and go, oh, but we're friends, right? And then bringing it up again and bringing in his status. And that is going to undo him in the end, because these two guys are like, look, you don't know what it's like to sit in my skin. You don't know what I have to do on a daily basis just to survive. Fuck you. But they also talk a lot about conscience and about, they've been given this awful task, and how do they reconcile their thinking to doing this deed?
I would like to, after we go through this with a fine tooth comb and Ari has a chance to listen to it, because that was my argument about the murderers.
Yeah.
That they're being hired by people who outrank them by a lot, and you can't, people you can't say no to.
Yeah.
But his point was, who do they have to be that those are the people, that they are the people that the nobility or king or whoever chose to pay for this? Like, what made them be the people that were the go-to people for being murderers? So I would like to invite Ari, after we've gone through this, to come on next time and talk a little bit about this. Or maybe do an ancillary little...
and feedback and see what he thought after he listened, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great, yeah.
And also, any of you out there who can think of other murderers in other of Shakespeare's plays that either do or do not support the idea that murderers can be villains because they don't have backstory that supports why they do what they do, please write to us or, email us, whatever, so that we can share that. Because I think it's an interesting thing. I'm so vehemently opposed to labeling anybody a villain that if I'm proven wrong, I'd like to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking specifically about this example that I saw. And okay, this is in film, in the Tudors. But it's a guy who, they coerced. He was a cook. Coerced into poisoning a whole room full of people by just putting something in their food. And you could see the torment of his soul, but he was like, it was literally for a few coins just to feed his family, and he thought it would be okay and that they would protect him and he would get away with it. And it was, so it was so horrible, but it was so horrible. This whole room full of people dies, and then he gets boiled in oil, which is just ghastly, feet first, it's horrible. So I think they know the stakes. You'll see the first murderer say, I got to get the fuck out of here because when this shit hits a fan, I'm in deep shit. I'm going to be the first one they come to, not Richard, you know? So they are the last word on this, you know? Nobody's going to accuse the person that hired them. So it's a lot of high stakes for them, very high stakes. Yeah. So let's jump in.
Okay.
Okay. We are in the tower.
Tower of London.
Brackenberry. Why looks your grace so heavily today?
Clarence. Oh, I've passed a miserable night, so full of ugly sights, of ghastly dreams, that, as I am a Christian faithful man, I would not spend another such night, though 'twere to buy a world of happy days. So full of dismal terror was the time.
Yeah, so we have dreams right up front. I like ghastly because it sounds like ghostly. And then he tells you right up front, I am a Christian faithful man. However, here's some,
let's have a look at your dream.
Shit and some prophetic stuff that I've got to reconcile with.
But you know what? Maybe that's one of the reasons he doesn't lend it credence, is because it's not full of Christian imagery. So therefore, it can't be from God.
Nice. I like it. All right, Brackenberry. What was your dream? I long to hear you tell it.
Clarence, methoughts that I had broken from the tower and was embarked to cross to Burgundy, and in my company my brother Gloucester, who from my cabin tempted me to walk upon the hatches. Thence we looked toward England and sighted up a thousand fearful times during the wars of York and Lancaster that had befallen us as we paced along upon the giddy footing of the hatches. Methought that Gloucester stumbled and, in falling, struck me, that thought to stay him, overboard into the tumbling billows of the main.
I'm going to stop there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we were embarked across to Burgundy. So he had escaped, first of all. I had broken from the tower. I escaped.
Yeah. Yep.
And we got in a boat. We were going over to Burgundy, which is, you know, the northern border of France. And it's where, if people were banished or if they had to get away from England, it's kind of where they went to find asylum. Also interesting is that this image is what some people theorize happened to the youngest of the two princes. That he broke from the tower and that someone took him on a boat and brought him over to Burgundy. Because there's this whole story, which we will tell you later when we get to the scene about the two princes. Mm-hmm. There's a story of this guy named Perkin Warbeck, who came back later and claimed that he was Richard, Duke of York, the youngest brother.
Wow.
And his story was believed for a long time, actually.
Huh.
Yeah, very interesting. So that's really cool, is that those first two lines like kind of talk about that story in a way. And then we have the word tempted, which is a devil word, you know, attached to Gloucester.
Right.
The hatches is the deck. We had a bit of nostalgia thinking about, oh, the battles of the Wars of the Roses. Wasn't that fun?
But they were fearful.
Times. Yes. Yeah. We have the giddy footing of that, right? The reeling, the deck is reeling a little bit. And then Gloucester stumbled. And I think that's so interesting because Clarence doesn't see that as a voluntary act. It's like an accident.
So right. He stumbled and he hit me.
He hit me by accident
and I fell overboard, but I was trying to,
make sure to catch him. Yeah. Right.
And then I fell overboard, but he didn't push me.
So I think Clarence really doesn't see him as malicious.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Into the billows, the waves, okay? So he's going overboard into the waves.
Lord, Lord, methought, what pain it was to drown. What dreadful noise of waters in mine ears. What ugly sights of death within mine eyes. Methought I saw a thousand fearful racks, a thousand men that fishes gnawed upon. Wedges of gold, great anchors, heaps of pearls, inestimable stones, unvalued jewels, all scattered in the bottom of the sea.
So what's he seeing?
Well, first of all, he thinks, it's awful to drown.
Yeah.
You hear the water in your ears. You see death through your eyes. And so he feels like he's seeing dead bodies. He's seeing men that have been eaten by fish.
Yeah, and then I love this. Also, a thousand fearful racks.
Yeah, and then also jewels and pearls and so wealth with death.
Yeah, because it's like, I think he's seeing like all of these boats at the bottom of the sea. Shipping and merchants were such a big thing in Shakespeare's time. It's such a new, you know, to like take a boat and go somewhere and bring back all these treasures. But it was a huge risk. Antonio and the Merchant of Venice, we hear him talk about, he sent out 3 ships and now he thinks they're all gone.
Yeah. So and also we talked about this in Measure for Measure when we talked about Mariana and her dowry.
Yep, the dowry going down. So it was a very, very real, very visceral fear for them all. So here's Clarence drowning and noticing all the stuff that's at the bottom of the sea that people risk their lives to get. And what the fuck does it mean? Nothing. There's dead men's skulls and there's, you know, jewels in the skulls. Like, it's like death is mocking you.
All right, I'm going to go on. Some lay in dead men's skulls, and in those holes where eyes did once inhabit, there were crept, as 'twere in scorn of eyes, reflecting gems, which wooed the slimy bottom of the deep and mocked the dead bones that lay scattered by.
Yeah, I love this word wooed, because it's like even love is rotten there. Like, we risk, because Clarence also risked everything for his family. So we take these giant risks, and what does it all fucking mean? Fucking zip. Nothing. We're seizing at power, we're seizing at wealth, and none of it means anything. We're going to end up dead.
Well, you can't take it with
sea.
You. It ends up at the bottom of the sea
in
dead people's skulls.
Yeah, and I love the mockery of the jewels and the eyeballs, you know?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Incredible. Brackenbury's wrapped in this story, right? Had you such leisure in the time of death to gaze upon the secrets of the deep?
Clarence, methought I had, and often did I strive to yield the ghost. But still the envious flood stopped in my soul and would not let it forth to seek the empty, vast, and wandering air, but smothered it within my panting bulk, which almost burst to belch it in the sea.
Incredible.
Burst to belch it.
Those great bees, yeah. Yeah, he's like, I wanted to die, yield the ghost.
Yeah, I wanted to give up the ghost, but it wouldn't let me.
It wouldn't let me. And so we have the envious flood, like the element of water becoming malicious. And this villain that's ungraspable. So I think it's the image of Richard. Like, nobody's got a handle on exactly what he's doing yet. So he's like water. You can't hold it. You can't figure it out, you know? Mm. The envious flood stopped in my soul like a cork in a bottle, like shutting it up. Is he going to shut me up?
Oh, I'm not stopped gonna... as in like a stopper. I get it now. Okay.
Yeah. Like he's going to shut me up. He doesn't know it's Richard he's talking about. But to me, to the audience, I feel like we hear that.
Yeah.
My panting bulk, my gasping body. So we've got these great visceral images. Yeah.
He's a great storyteller.
Yeah.
Clarence.
Yeah.
He's very, I mean, he really, no wonder Brackenberry is enthralled.
Yeah. Brackenbury once more. Awaked you not with this sore agony?
No, my dream was lengthened after life. Oh, then began the tempest to my soul. I passed, methought, the melancholy flood with that grim ferryman which poets write of unto the kingdom of perpetual night. The first that there did greet my stranger soul was my great father-in-law, renowned Warwick, who cried aloud, "What scourge for perjury can this dark monarchy afford false Clarence?"
Yeah. Okay, so I didn't stop dreaming.
After I died, right? I died, but the dream went on.
Yeah, which is weird. The melancholy flood is the River Styx. Very definitely, because we've got the Grim Ferryman. That's Karen, who rows the boat and rows the souls across into the underworld, which poets did write off, which Virgil and Dante wrote of, you know, unto the kingdom of perpetual night.
Hades.
Yeah. Down to hell. And then the first, my stranger soul was my newly arrived. I'm the new guy in town.
Right. No one knows me.
Yep. But then I love this alliteration, scourge for perjury.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What punishment for lying under oath is in store for Clarence? Because if anyone was going to say that, it would be Warwick, because Clarence turned against him on the battlefield. Like, he showed up with a battalion of men to fight for Warwick, with Warwick, and then turned them around and said, nope, sorry, taking them over to my brother Edward. Bye-bye. Yeah. And I like this dark monarchy, which could also be hell, but it could also metaphorically be the rule of the Yorks. They got their monarchy by blood.
What scourge for perjury can this dark monarch? Yes.
Yeah.
And so he vanished. Then came wandering by a shadow like an angel, with bright hair dabbled in blood. And he squeaked out loud, Clarence is come, false, fleeting, perjured Clarence, that stabbed me in the field by Tewkesbury. Seize on him, Furies, take him to your torments. With that, methoughts a legion of foul fiends environed me about, and howled in mine ears such hideous cries that with the very noise I trembling waked, and for a season after could not believe but that I was in hell. Such terrible impression made the dream.
Beautiful ending with the word dream also. We started with dream, we end with dream. Yeah, so the next person, the next soul that came was a shadow like an angel. Who dat, Erin?
Well, shadow is an actor.
Yeah, that's cool. And also a ghost.
Yeah.
So there was an actor that played this ghost that came by, and it was Prince Edward. And he describes him as like looking so beautiful, like, because he was young. He shouldn't have died so young. Because we have the word squeaked also. That's like a young man's voice that's turning to man.
Yeah. Child sounding. When your voice cracks, when your voice is lowering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Squeaks. Squeaked. False, fleeting, perjured Clarence. So perjury seems to be the thing that nobody wants to forgive him for, right? Lying, lying, lying. And fleeting, I think, is inconstant. Yeah. Flip-flopper. And who are the Furies?
Oh, well, they're the ones that have the strings of life, right? Is that right?
No, those are the Fates. The Furies are the ones that pursue, like, they were the ones that were coming after Oedipus. And, like, he has to pay for his crimes. Yeah?
Yeah. And they're hags.
Yeah. Yeah. You say that like crony. It's a bad thing.
No. Crony hags.
Yeah.
I'm all in with the crones.
Yeah. A legion of foul fiends. That kind of made me think of Edgar, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
In
the foul fiend
circled me. Yeah, the foul fiend is coming. And for a season after a long time, I still thought I was in hell when I woke up. So we've got dream and hell kind of equated there at the end because
line endings, right?
Yeah. Okay, Brackenberry. No marvel, Lord, though it affrighted you. I am afraid methinks to hear you tell it.
Oh, keeper, keeper! I have done those things which now bear evidence against my soul for Edward's sake. And see how he requites me. Oh, God, if my deep prayers cannot appease thee, but thou wilt be avenged on my misdeeds, yet execute thy wrath in me alone. Oh, spare my guiltless wife and my poor children! Keeper! I prithee sit by me a while. My soul is heavy, and I fain would sleep.
Yeah, so the keeper is the guard.
So he's going back and forth, back and forth. He's talking to Brackenberry, and he's calling for the guard.
Mm-hmm. I like execute thy wrath. Right? Because he's going to be executed very soon. But he's like, God, you know, if you intend to punish me, just take it out on me. Don't, you know, leave my family out of it. Which you kind of hear a little echoes of Macduff there, or some precursors of Macduff. Like, why is my family heavy. Punished for my sins? Yeah.
Right. My soul is heavy, and I fain would sleep.
Yeah. Fain means gladly. Brackenbury. I will, my lord. God give your grace good rest. And probably Clarence lies down there. I mean, in stage directions, sometimes he does. Yeah. Sorrow breaks seasons and reposing hours, makes the night morning and the noontide night. Princes have but their titles for their glories, an outward honor for an inward toil, and for unfelt imaginations, they often feel a world of restless cares, so that betwixt their titles and low name, there's nothing differs but the outward fame.
Wow, rhyming couplet. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go back.
Sorrow breaks seasons. So he's like, sorrow interrupts the rhythms of our life, makes night morning and noontide night. We can't sleep. We're up in the middle of the night and we sleep during the day. And then he starts talking about princes have but their titles. The only thing they get rewarded for their deeds that they do, even if they're horrible deeds, because I'm sure he's heard all this guilt that Clarence is talking about. So they only get nobility, and nobility is a thing that you can't hold.
Right.
You can't feel it. It's they get an outward honor for an inward toil, so they get an external reward for inner turmoil. And I love this line, and for unfelt imaginations. It's if you say it in the pentameter rhythm, it's a six syllable word, imagination. Yeah. So the glories that they imagine, but they're not tangible. All they get for them is care, like being upset and worried. And so that betwixt their titles and low name, there's nothing difference but the outward fame. So low name is him, Brackenbury. He doesn't have a name. He's nobody.
Yeah.
And their title, between them and me, there's no difference except this title, prince, duke, whatever the fuck it is.
And but they're still human beings, and they still, you know, yes, you might have more money, but you also have more turmoil and more
care and more guilt and more
things, right, in your conscience to deal with. But I just, for some reason, this is really striking me.
This little speech?
Yeah, just the idea that, you know, you're raised to defend your family and the, you know, the dukedom or the whatever. And I mean, in the end, it really means not a thing.
Yeah.
It's very, God, what is it reminding me of? Just, you know, that the whole idea of you can't take it with you, and that the stuff that we do here, like when you're lying on your deathbed at the end of your life, you're going to think about the people you loved and the people who loved you and maybe the things that you didn't do, but you're not going to be like, yeah, I did really well in that battle, or yeah, I had more gold than my neighbor, or yeah. I mean, it's just hitting home for some reason. I'm not really sure why.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's one of these examples of like this little character who's, he could be nobody, but he has a wonderful something to say here.
Yeah.
And, you know, really talking about what is the point of status.
Right.
And it's a great segue to the murderers who are coming in right now, because they're going to elaborate on this point.
What is the point of status? Man, we could ask that in the United States, too. What is the point of status? It serves us not at all.
Yeah. It's just
the haves
a
and the have-nots. Yeah. It's just a it's just a fake divider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although most dividers are. Anyway. Here comes the first murderer. Oh, who's here?
In God's name, what are you? And how came you hither?
I would speak with Clarence and came hither on my legs.
What, so brief? Second murderer. 'Tis better, sir, than to be tedious. Let him see our commission. Talk no more. Brackenbury reads the commission. I am in this commanded to deliver the noble Duke of Clarence to your hands. I will not reason what is meant hereby, because I will be guiltless of the meaning. There lies the Duke asleep, and there the keys. I'll to the king, and signify to him that thus I have resigned to you my charge. So after Brackenberry was like, oh, I feel bad for you. And, you know, your stupid title that you won is worth nothing. And look at you, your life. And now he's like, oh, okay. I wash my hands of this. I'm out. You know, I will be guiltless of, I want to be innocent of whatever is intended here. And I need to leave.
But also, I mean, he's protecting himself.
Yeah. Self-preservation, right? For sure.
I can't be involved in this because it could be detrimental to me and my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm going to go tell the powers that be that I did my job, which was to turn over. The warrant says turn over Clarence to these guys. Okay. That's all I know.
Yeah. First murderer. You may, sir. Just point of wisdom. Fare you well.
Second murderer. What, shall I stab him as he sleeps?
No, he'll say 'twas done cowardly when he wakes.
Why, he shall never wake until Great Judgment Day.
Why, then he will say we stabbed him sleeping.
Oh, the urging of that word judgment hath bred a kind of remorse in me.
What, art thou afraid?
Not to kill him, having a warrant, but to be damned for killing him, from the which no warrant can defend me.
I thought thou hadst been resolute.
So I am, to let him live.
How back to the Duke of Gloucester? Tell him so.
Nay, I prithee, stay a little. I hope this passionate humor of mine will change. It was wont to hold me but while one would tell 20. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to stab him, because remember what Richard said? He said, don't listen to him talk.
Right.
He will talk you out of it.
Right.
Just do what you were sent to do there. So the second murderer is like, let's just do it. And the first one's like, no, that's kind of, you know, stupid, is to just stab him while he's sleeping.
Right. That's against our moral code.
As murderers.
We want him to know who's killing him.
Yeah. And then he says, you know, he won't wake up till Judgment Day. We don't have to worry about it. And then he's like, uh-oh, I mentioned Judgment Day, and that makes me think of church, and uh-oh, I'm going to be damned for doing this thing. My soul will be damned. And then he's like, I think I'll let him live. And the other first one's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go tell Richard. No. Don't do it. My passionate humor, my compassionate mood is going to pass in a second. Just hang on. But while one would tell 20, only lasts till I count to 20. I just have to count to 20 and then I'll be fine.
I'll be ready to stab him. Stabby stab. First murderer, how dost thou feel thyself now?
A faith, some certain dregs of conscience are yet within me. Great foreshadowing, because the dregs are what sit on the bottom of the wine barrel. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Remember our reward when the deed is done.
Zounds, he dies. I had forgot the reward.
Where is thy conscience now?
In the Duke of Gloucester's purse.
When he opens his purse to give us our reward, thy conscience flies out.
'Tis no matter, let it go. There's few or none will entertain it.
How if it come to thee again?
I'll not meddle with it. It's a dangerous thing. It makes a man a coward. So, just a little back. Zounds is God's wounds. We have that come up a lot. So, well, forget my conscience. Don't worry. I'm over it. I'm going to get paid. It's all good. And then he has this wonderful speech about conscience. So, let's see what he thinks about conscience now. A man cannot steal, but it accuseth him. He cannot swear, but it checks him. He cannot lie with his neighbor's wife, but it detects him. 'Tis a blushing, shamefaced spirit that mutinies in a man's bosom. It fills a man full of obstacles. It made me once restore a purse of gold that, by chance, I found. It beggars any man that keeps it. It is turned out of all towns and cities for a dangerous thing, and every man that means to live well endeavors to trust himself and to live without it. I love this. So he's kind of going through all the commandments, and he's like, yeah, if you have conscience, you never get to go against the commandments. You can't swear, you can't steal, you can't sleep with your neighbor's wife. Your conscience will trip you up every time. I like shamefaced. It's embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Conscience makes you embarrassed. Conscience mutinies in your bosom. It goes against your heart. So like you want to do something in your heart and then conscience tells you no. So it's this great little speech that I think is sort of a rehearsal speech for Shakespeare to this speech that Falstaff says at the end of Henry IV, Part One, all about honor. What is honor? It's a word. It's nothing. I don't care. It's wonderful how Shakespeare plays with these concepts that we all think are sacred.
Right. We just take them at face value. We don't even think about it, right? A king is a king. We don't even go, oh, a king is a man.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
Yeah, we don't examine these things. We don't say, what is honor? What does it mean to be honorable? What do you have to do to be counted honorable? What is conscience?
We still do that.
Yeah. What is conscience? What is it making me do? Maybe it's making me act against my nature. I don't know. You know? Maybe it's an imposed outward ruling system.
Well, okay, so let's investigate that for a minute.
Yeah.
My brain is doing all kinds of weird flippity-flopping in this episode.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
No.
But like, I mean, the reason we have the Ten Commandments in Judeo-Christian
tradition,
you know, is to be an external conscience. But there are plenty of people in the world who don't, I was going to say succumb, but who are non-believers in that tradition, and yet they also have internal conscience. So the idea that we are inherently bad and evil
and need
external guidance, it, you know, is fluff of the worst kind.
Yeah,
because we do have internal compasses. We do know what feels. I mean, yes, we are all tempted from time to time to do things that we know are not considered right.
Yeah.
We're all tempted, but that doesn't mean we don't know that. I mean, you know, I think if you're a sociopath or a psychopath, maybe that doesn't matter. But human beings are a community-oriented species. We know that if you do something that harms someone else, that endangers our standing within our community, and that's internal. It's not external.
Yeah,
it's an internal knowing.
I guess he's arguing with conscience here because he doesn't want to feel that prick of conscience because it's going to keep him from making his money here.
Mm-hmm. And possibly endangering him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the Christians, I hate to group them all together because I know that's not true for all Christians, but you know, that there's this idea that if we don't have the Christian religion to keep us from doing bad things, that we'll just do all bad things all the time. But if you look in any community, it doesn't matter what community you choose, there are always going to be people who do the things that are against the community's rules, always. And it's just human nature that some of us humans go against the rules on a consistent basis. And religion is not going to stop those people from doing it. I mean, look at the Hasidic community. You know, when bars was in Nyack, the gay bar, you know, there used to be Hasidic young men at the gas station asking for directions to bars. You know, not that I'm saying that being gay is bad. That's not my point.
For their community. Yeah.
Right. So there's a percentage of those people who are going to be gay, no matter how, you know, no matter what community you're in, there's going to be a percentage of people who are gay. There's going to be a percentage of people who shoplift. There's going to be a percentage of people who are predators. There's going to be it doesn't matter what group.
Yeah. And so
the religious rules don't curtail that.
Right. We have to hope that internal rules will prevail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. That was kind of a side track. I don't even want to call it a soapbox because it was like a muddle of errant thoughts.
That's all right. It was an errant thought cloud.
I'll have to come up with a sound effect for that.
All right. So the first murderer hears this whole speech about conscience and he goes, uh-oh.
Zounds, it is even now at my elbow, persuading me not to kill the Duke.
Second murder.
God damn it, you made me think.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking.
Now the second murderer. Take the devil in thy mind and relieve him not. He would insinuate with thee but to make thee sigh. So now he's advocating for trust the devil and subdue the promptings of your conscience. So it's like this reversal of Christian ideal. He's like, go with the devil and fuck your conscience. It's almost like this speech of Lancelot's in Merchant of Venice, which is going to come much later after this play. The fiend is at my elbow. We can hear it, you know, where he's like, and he's prompting me to do this. And I'm like, no, fiend. And then my conscience says, yes, go do this thing.
Yeah.
And then conscience is like, I don't like you, conscience. Yeah. So it's this great, we can really trace the threads of Shakespeare writing. And he goes, oh, I wrote that snippet back then. I'm going to expand on that. It was kind of fun.
Right. And then he makes this really funny, piece.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
First murderer. Tut. I am strong framed. He cannot prevail with me, I warrant thee.
Spoke like a tall man that respects thy reputation. Come, shall we to this gear? Thy reputation as a murderer.
Yeah, right. Right.
So he's like, good job for getting back in line with your call to duty.
Take him over the costard with the hilts of thy sword, and then we will chop him in the Malmsey butt in the next room.
Yay, you said butt.
Butt.
Seeing as how this scene is not very sexy, but we got the word butt. Okay.
Yeah.
Yay. And we have costard, which is an apple, but it's also a word for your head. So he's like, bop him over the head, then we'll chop him up, and we'll throw him in the Malmsey butt. The Malmsey butt was a cask of wine. Isn't that nice? They have a whole cask full of wine in the prison.
Well, remember, we talked about how in the Tower of London, nobility had, you know, chambers that had rugs and chairs and food and books and, you know,
wine.
Not like, yeah, and wine. Right. But also, I think it's interesting. I mean, Malmsey butt. There's a lot of things that come to mind for me. Malmsey sort of sounds like mummy, but, you know.
Mommy's butt?
Mommy's butt. But also, you know, when you say bunghole.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that wine also?
Yeah. That's the hole in the casket. Stop
right.
up a bunghole. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think maybe the groundlings would be going,
Said butt.
I don't know. Maybe not.
And Stefano in The Tempest, he says, when the butt is out, we will drink water and not a drop before. When the butt is out. Got to do that play one of these days.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first murderer made that up on the spot. He's like, we'll knock him off the head, chop him up, and then we'll put him in the wine cask. And the second murderer's like, oh, I like it. Oh, excellent device. Make a sop of him. So if you guys remember back to King Lear, make a sop of the moonshine. A sop is a piece of bread that you use to scoop up your gravy on the bottom of the bowl.
Plate.
Yeah.
Soft. He wakes.
Strike.
No, we'll reason with him.
Bad idea.
Yeah, right. You're not supposed to talk to him. Remember what he said?
Yeah.
Clarence, where art thou, keeper? Give me a cup of wine.
You shall have wine enough, my lord, anon.
Clarence, in God's name, what art thou?
A man, as you are.
But not as I am, royal.
Nor you, as we are, loyal.
Ah,
I love how he's playing with him. Yeah, so watch the antitheses in this, the rest of the scene, because it's really great. As each side tries to make their argument about why they're right, they really toss them back and forth. They're really good. So we have Clarence bringing in status. I'm royal. I'm better than you. And the second murderer was like, yeah, I'm better than you because I'm loyal. Because remember, that is Clarence's big sin, is flip-flopping.
Yeah. Clarence, thy voice is thunder, but Thy looks are humble.
My voice is now the king's, my looks my own. I speak Clarence. With the king's authority, but yeah. He says king, but it's not clear, but it will become clear that maybe he means Richard. Mm. And that maybe Richard has kind of told these guys, look, if I get to be king, when I get to be king, I could do
I'll elevate
for you.
You
guys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Clarence, how darkly and how deadly dost thou speak. Wow. Duh, duh, duh.
Yeah.
Darkly and deadly dost thou. It's like, blah, 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 blah. Your eyes do menace me. Why look you pale? Who sent you hither? Wherefore do you come?
And both the murderers are stuttering a little.
To murder me?
Aye.
Clarence, you scarcely have the hearts to tell me so, and therefore cannot have the hearts to do it. Wherein, my friends, have I offended you?
Yeah, so he's trying to demote his status for a moment. We're friends, it's okay.
And first murderer, offended us you have not, but the king. Clarence, I shall be reconciled to him again.
Never, my lord. Therefore prepare to die.
Clarence, are you called forth from out a world of men to slay the innocent? What is my offense? Where are the evidence that do accuse me? What lawful quest have given their verdict up unto the frowning judge, or who pronounced the bitter sentence of poor Clarence's death? Before I be convict by course of law, to threaten me with death is most unlawful. I charge you, as you hope to have redemption, by Christ's dear blood shed for our grievous sins, that you depart and lay no hands on me. The deed you undertake is damnable.
Okay, so that's his opening argument, yeah? Mm-hmm. Are you called forth? Have you been summoned? That almost has the feeling of demons. Have you been summoned to kill the innocent? He's not innocent.
Right? Well, he thinks he is.
Uh-huh. He knows he isn't. He just had that whole dream about how he wasn't, right?
Yeah, but that was all in the service of the king, so that does make him innocent.
So it doesn't count? Yeah.
Well, I mean, see, that's the argument, right? If I... Israel and Palestine,
right.
Yet again. If I kill innocent people, or if I kill people anyway, whether I think they're innocent or not, if I kill them in service of my higher good, then it's a good thing, because they're not really human beings anyway. They're something
right.
Other than, right? It's the same thing. So the argument can be made in his brain obviously his subconscious knows he did not do good things.
Yeah.
But in his waking life, where the brother of the king-to-be, you know, kills a prince who's young and his voice hasn't even fully changed yet, so that the proper heir to the throne can take the throne, then that's a good thing.
Right. Righteous.
Yeah. So, right. So that's why I think he says that.
Yeah. And he's bringing in the law. Like, I know about law and you don't. What lawful quest? What process of law has convicted me unto the frowning judge that who's already made up his mind? Before I'm convicted, before I be convict, you can't threaten me with death. That's not okay.
That's not lawful.
Yeah.
And
then
further
in your souls. Yeah.
Right. If you kill me, you're going to hell.
Yeah. As you hope to have redemption. If you think you're going to have any prayer of going to heaven, you can't do this.
Right. But he thinks he's going to heaven even though he killed people.
Yeah. But that was different, as we just established.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. First murderer. What we will do, we do upon command.
And he that hath commanded is our king. That's the third time they say the word king, but this time it's most definitely they mean Richard.
Our king.
He's the one who gave us the warrant.
Clarence, erroneous vassals, the great king of kings hath in the tables of his law commanded that thou shalt do no murder. Will you then spurn at his edict and fulfill a man's? Ah, Ten Commandments, there we go.
There you go. And it's also that thing of like, you cannot take upon you the work of God. Thou shalt not kill, period. It's God's province to decide who lives and who dies.
So we like erroneous vassals. Right? Yeah.
You criminal wretches.
But also erroneous, wrong.
Wrong. You are wrong. And he's again assuming status, vassals. He's pushing them down again. So he keeps doing this, like pushing himself up and over them, which is really a mistake. And so then he brings in the great King of Kings, right? This is God now that I am speaking for God. And he shouldn't do these things.
Humans should never speak for God. It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
So we don't know what he really wants, if he exists. She, they, whatever.
So we've got God's law and man's law. Yeah. So are you going to take man's law over God's law? That's not good. Second murder.
Wait, I didn't go all the way. Right. I didn't go all the way. Clarence, take heed, for he who holds vengeance in his hands to hurl upon their heads that break his law.
And that same vengeance doth he hurl on thee for false forswearing and for murder too. Thou didst receive the sacrament to fight in quarrel of the house of Lancaster.
First murderer. And, like a traitor to the name of God, didst break that vow, and with thy treacherous blade, unripped the bowels of thy sovereign's son.
Wow. So, first of all, these two low-born people are very well-spoken, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are. And they are making some really good points. And it's also interesting that this whole history is very well known by the people of the land. They have been paying it. We were saying last, a couple episodes again, that they're probably just like, who the fuck is walking over my farm now? Just leave me the fuck out of it. But I think they also have, like, some of them have paid attention to this whole thing and like, oh, that guy wasn't supposed to do that. And this guy shouldn't have the crown because of this. And these guys are really putting forth the idea that they have been following this and know the rules and the stakes and who did what. And they're really convinced that Clarence lied and deserves to die.
Well, he killed his king's son.
Yeah.
Because at that time, that was still their king.
Yeah.
King Henry was still their king.
And you killed his son on the battlefield. Yeah. And you were sworn to defend the Lancasters because you swore to Warwick that you would and defend him and defend King Henry. And now, and then you just flip-flopped and you did exactly the opposite thing. And so you deserve this. Mm-hmm. How did you think you were going to get away with that? And I like, unrips.
Unrips. Unrips.
It's really like shredding through skin.
Yeah.
Yeah? You ripped open your king's son. Yeah. Second murderer, whom thou wert sworn to cherish and defend.
First murderer, how canst thou urge God's dreadful law to us when thou hast broke it in so dear degree?
Yeah. Are the rules different for you than they are for us?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
And Clarence, alas, for whose sake did I that ill deed? For Edward, for my brother. For his sake, he sends you not to murder me for this, for in this sin he is as deep as I. If God will be avenged for this deed, oh, know you yet he doth it publicly. Take not the quarrel from this powerful arm. He needs no indirect nor lawless course to cut off those that have offended him.
Yeah. So God punishes in the open, not secretly in dark prison cells.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes people just die in dark prison cells. But if they're dying in dark prison cells, it's probably because of some human chose
plot
to do away with it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So take not the quarrel. Do not assume that you have permission to do God's work. So
you're not God.
Yeah.
You're not. You can't know his will.
Yeah.
First murderer. Whom made thee then a bloody minister, when gallant, springing, brave Plantagenet, that princely novice, was struck dead by thee?
So here it is again. They're really harping on Prince Edward, like he did not deserve what you gave him.
And also the Plantagenet, same family.
Yeah.
Your own cousin.
Your own cousin. Princely novice. He was new to majesty. He's very young.
And Clarence.
I like minister because that's like an embedded antithesis, right?
Yeah.
You think you're doing God's work.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Bloody minister. It's so great. Yeah.
It makes me think of Lady Mac.
Yeah.
Anyway. Clarence, my brother's love, the devil, and my rage. First murderer. Thy brother's love, our duty, and thy fault provoke us hither now to slaughter thee.
Beautiful turning around of his own words. Oh, yeah? I can argue just as well as you.
Yeah, Clarence. Oh, if you love my brother, hate not me. I am his brother, and I love him well. If you be hired for Mead, go back again, and I will send you to my brother Gloucester, who shall reward you better for my life than Edward will for tidings of my death.
I love that. He's so misled by impressions. I love, hate, love. Like, love cancels out hate there. But then we have the last two lines, life, death. Death is going to cancel you out. We have hired for Mead as a reward. So he's like, if you want a reward, go to Gloucester. He's going to pay you better for me still being alive. And the second murderer is like, you are deceived. Your brother Gloucester hates you.
Clarence, oh no. He loves me and he holds me dear. Go you to him from me.
Aye, so we will.
So we will. Clarence, tell him when that our princely father York blessed his three sons with his victorious arm and charged us from his soul to love each other, he little thought of this divided friendship. Bid Gloucester think of this, and he will weep.
Yeah. He's bringing in Richard's favorite person.
Daddy.
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 Daddy didn't want us to fight with each other.
Daddy asked us to always love each other.
So remember Daddy, and you will cry, and you will let me go.
First murderer. High millstones as he lessened us to weep.
Yeah, the last couple lines of the last scene, right? Richard said, you're going to weep millstones. I love it. Big old rocks instead of tears.
Clarence, oh, do not slander him, for he is kind. First murderer, right, as snow in harvest. Come, you deceive yourself. 'Tis he that sends us to destroy you here. Right, like, as snow in harvest.
Get it through your thick head.
right as he's kind. Yeah, just like frost is to the apples that haven't been picked yet.
Right.
Yeah. Clarence, it cannot be, for he bewept my fortune and hugged me in his arms and swore with sobs that he would labor my delivery. Labor for me, that's a birth thing there.
Yeah,
there we go.
Fantastic. Labor work for. Second murderer. Why, so he doth when he delivers you from this world's thraldom to the joys of heaven.
First murderer, make peace with God, for you must die, my lord. Clarence, have you that holy feeling in your souls to counsel me to make my peace with God? And are you yet to your own souls so blind that you wilt war with God by murdering me? Oh, sirs, consider, they that set you on to do this deed will hate you for the deed.
What shall we do?
Clarence, relent and save your souls. Which of you, if you were a prince's son, being pent from liberty as I am now, if two such murderers as yourselves came to you, would not entreat for life?
So first murderer. He's making a mistake there because he's trying to have them imagine what it's like to be him. They can't.
And they don't want to.
And as soon as he brings in the fact that he's a prince again, prince meaning some noble person, they're like, fuck you and all you guys that came before you, you know?
Right. First murderer, relent. No, 'tis cowardly and womanish.
Well, because, you know, women are the evil ones.
And the weaker ones, but... yeah. Okay, Clarence, not to relent is beastly, savage, devilish. My friend, I spy some pity in thy looks. Oh, if thine eye be not a flatterer, come thou on my side and entreat for me, as you would beg were you in my distress. A begging prince, what beggar pities not? Ooh.
Yeah.
Just because you're high does not mean you'll get my pity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially not a begging prince. Like, really? You have lived on the fluffy pillow your whole life. Fuck you. Fuck you. Big mistake, I think, that last line.
Yeah.
Second murderer, look behind you, my lord.
First murderer, take that and that! If all this will not do, I'll drown you in the Malmsey butt within.
And we have the great stage direction exit with the body. Bit of a problem. Just lifts him up. Off he goes.
Yeah.
A bloody deed and desperately dispatched. How fain like Pilate would I wash my hands of this most grievous guilty murder done.
Huh. Interesting.
There's conscience coming back.
Yeah.
You thought you were done with them, but no. So fain, gladly, and Pilate, we have the Christian villain, right?
Yep.
Who condemns Christ. So what can we infer here is that Clarence is now Christ in this guy's head.
Ay, ay, ay. God damn. All right. First murderer comes back in. How now? What meanst thou that thou helpst not me, Lupa? That thou helpst me not? By heavens, the Duke shall know how slack thou art. Why aren't you helping me? I can't carry this dude by myself, and I'm going to tell Richard that you didn't help.
Yeah. I would he knew that I had saved his brother. Take thou the fee and tell him what I say, for I repent me that the Duke is slain.
He doesn't even want the money.
Doesn't even want the money, and he calls Clarence the Duke at the end, so he accepts that exalted status as a thing that he should not have transgressed.
So do not I. Go, coward as thou art. Now must I hide his body in some hole until the Duke take order for his burial. And when I have my meed, I must away, for this will out, and here I must not stay.
Nope, I don't want to be anywhere near here. Gotta get going. But hide his body in some hole? There's a bit of foreshadowing once again. Yeah, we will talk more about the death of the princes later, but they were definitely...
when it comes.
Hidden in some hole.
Hidey hole.
All right. What do you think of these murderers now?
I still think that the first murderer doesn't really have a whole lot of conscience. He has that one moment only when the second murderer brings up...
yes, has the whole speech about conscience, and then the first murderer's like, ooh.
I hadn't really thought of that. But then he goes right back. He's like, blah, 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 yeah. He wants the money.
Well, he says very clearly, where's your conscience now? In the Duke of Gloucester's purse. We need the money.
Mm-hmm.
We need the money. And, you know, there's some sense that these powerful people said they would protect us.
Yeah, but Clarence specifically says they're gonna come for you for doing like they're not gonna protect you.
Yep, they will hate you.
Yep,
because you did this awful thing. Yeah, tough spot to be in.
Well, you know, how do you end up being a murderer in the first place?
You're in a very, very bad spot.
I think we need to hear from Ari.
Okay, that would be fun.
If I can convince him.
Okay. He can get in the booth with you and talk back to him. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. We'd love to hear your thoughts, too. Okay. I'm Diana.
I'm Erin.
And this was Clarence.
Fuck Clarence in the momsy butt.
Yes. Fuck him in the momsy butt. I love it. Ciao, ciao.
Ta-ta.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.